You're listening to the Confidence Podcast, your one-stop shop for motivation, inspiration, and confidence to help you boldly and bravely take action on your dreams. I'm your host, Trish Blackwell, and I teach entrepreneurs and dream chasers to take action on the dream God put on their hearts. I empower go-getters to get past their stubborn insecurities so they can crush their goals, outgrow their fears, and create prosperity in their businesses and lives. It's time to rise and shine. Let's dive deep. Hey guys, let's dive deep. I am Trish, your host, your confidence coach, and I want to welcome you to the show. We are listening to episode number 288, and we're continuing the theme of body confidence here in October because I'm really jamming out. The reason I got into confidence in the first place is because I used to struggle. I mean, when I say struggle, struggle is a very kind, understated word. I couldn't survive the body dysmorphia, body confidence struggle that I battled for so long. And that's really what got me into wanting to understand the mind and the thoughts and how we speak to ourselves and how to recreate how we see ourselves. So body confidence for me is what started it all, which is why I'm pretty excited to be talking with you guys today about an unexpectedly simple solution to better body confidence. So that said, that's what we're talking about today. And this podcast, this topic in particular, is sponsored in part today by my newest program, The Donut Diet, because it's time to stand up to the bully of shame around food and around your body in life, and so that you can taste the sweetness that life and food have to offer. I really believe there's no food that should be bad or off limits, and that we can really live in a way and thrive with our quote-unquote donuts, the things that we love, and we don't have to feel guilty about them. And The Donut Diet, you guys, it's only available for a few weeks, so we've got about 4 more weeks that will be available. So if you're ready to be done with the emotional eating, get started now at thedonutdiet.com. It is a 6-week program. Get started now. It's an eating solution for emotional eaters. And that is what I was. And it was just this place that kept me stuck. And I want to offer you freedom. So in particular, in this episode, we're going to be talking and chatting about how to proudly and confidently take up the space that your body takes in this world without apologies, excuses, or insecurities. And I'm going to share with you, I have a special guest, which you guys know I don't often bring on guests. That means when I got a guest gone, you know it's going to be good. You know I have said no to about 50 people to say yes to one person. And this is actually a guest that I personally sought out myself. So you're going to get a psychotherapist's take on simplifying the body confidence equation. And then we're going to share with you some suggested next steps for anyone who feels stuck in a tumultuous eating relationship or a toxic body in image conundrum. I want this show to be able to be a launch pad for you to walk away and as this title promises, have an unexpectedly simple solution to better body confidence. As always, I need to do, we're going to start sharing reviews of the week. And before we do that, I want to let you, just a kind reminder, speaking of body confidence, you are beautiful and you are mindful about your health and your wellness in so many areas of your life, right? So in the same way you work out and you're working on your self-nourishment with your body, isn't it time that you consider the importance of the ingredients and the products that you use for your personal care and your cosmetics as well? And that, you guys, is why I'm obsessed with Beauty Counter. Beauty Counter has the strictest standards of safety in the industry, and it is a company for good that does good. Please, please, please switch to safer. Go check out Beauty Counter on your own at beautycounter.com/TrishBlackwell. It's an amazing way to add more beauty into your life and to honor the beautiful body that you have by loving on it with clean and safe products. Now, our review of the week from iTunes came from Butterflied, and it's simple and sweet. And I want to thank this reviewer. And here's what they said. I'm so grateful to have found this podcast. Listening to Trish has changed my life. And that's it. That was the review. Beautiful, succinct, And I want to say thank you right back to you, Butterfly. And you guys, if you haven't yet left a review, that is how more people find this show. So I want to ask for you to pay it forward. If you've been encouraged by anything you've listened here on the Confidence Podcast, and you felt built up, or like you got that like fire in your belly, knowing that you can do anything that you say you can do, and you hear my voice in the back of your mind, well, it's time to pay it forward and help somebody else discover the show. And that is done by writing a review and making sure you hit that subscribe button. What that does is, in the iTunes algorithms, it helps make this show something that becomes suggested for people. And I know that the day you found this encouragement, you probably said, oh, this is what I was looking for, right? So please pay that forward and help someone else do the same. And as the reviewer of the week showed you, it doesn't have to be a big, long paragraph review to make a difference. Two sentences can help others be encouraged. So thank you in advance for that. So I got to tell you about my special guest today. We have on the show today a friend of mine, an old classmate of mine from boarding school, Sarah Pennell. Sarah Pennell is from Whole Bodied Psychotherapy, which you can find at www.wepsychotherapy.org. And here's their theory. It's come as you are. All of you is welcome here. Life can be painful, and pain comes in many sizes and shapes, as do the ways in which we have coped. If the struggle is anxiety, trauma, relationship difficulties, depression, or struggles with your body or with food, the pain is real and it's worthy of the attention and care needed to help you thrive once more. While you may feel like the only one, you are not, and you do not need to face these struggles on your own. So Whole Embodied Psychotherapy specializes in the treatment of trauma, anxiety, and eating disorders. And what I want to tell you, though, beside this expertise, first and foremost, Sarah Pennell is a friend of mine. Sarah is licensed as a marriage and family therapist, both in California and in Georgia. She uses an integrated approach to therapy, which includes exploring the biological, psychological, and social and environmental aspects which are impacting the client or family. Her training in family systems allows Sarah to not only see an individual's context, but the larger picture of family dynamics and societal influences. Sarah has experience working with clients struggle with eating issues related to anxiety, trauma, eating disorders, disordered eating, body image concerns, depression, mood dysregulation, substance abuse, and relationship issues. She works with clients from 12 years old to adulthood as individuals, couples, or families. She also has experience working with clients from a wide range of backgrounds, ethnicities, religions, genders, immigration statuses, sexual orientations, ages, body sizes, and welcomes the opportunity to work with any human being. She's also had the opportunity to live abroad in a variety of countries, and she recognizes the importance of cultural sensitivity. Sarah believes that all humans and all bodies deserve respect and practices the philosophy of health at every size. Sarah is the former executive director of the Eating Disorders Information Network and currently serves on the organization's Medical Advisory Council. She is treasurer for the board of the Association of Size Diversity and Health, and she's also a member of the EMDR International Association and the International Association of Eating Disorder Professionals. So are you impressed yet? Like, because I'm telling you, I love this girl. She's amazing. It was incredible to reconnect and to bring her expertise here on the show to serve and encourage you. And my hope and prayer is that it provides you an unexpectedly simple solution to better body confidence. So let's jump into that interview and let's get excited to celebrate the space that we take up. All right, guys. You know I don't have guests on frequently at all. And often I don't get to bring on like a legitimate real life friend. And I get to today. Sarah Pennell, thank you so much for coming onto the Confidence Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Girl, I've been loving all that you've been doing. What's funny is you and I were just talking. It's almost embarrassing how long it's been since we've seen each other. Because it unveils how old we actually are, first off. But this is one of the problems of going to a boarding school, right? We went to boarding school together, and it's everybody lives in different places. So you really don't see people.
I know, it's crazy. It's like we spent almost all of our time together for right. a few years, and then we just don't see each other.
Exactly.
Maybe occasionally on Facebook or Instagram.
Exactly. So... You know, and what I love is that I feel like you and I mean, we were kindred spirits through high school and really understood one another and the pressures of perfectionism, both coming from a faith-based perspective, both really also feeling, I mean, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but always feeling passionate to be like, all right, I'm going to figure this out for myself and I'm going to use this to help other people. So with that said, that's a really open-ended. If you could just share a little bit about who you are, why, what your story is, why you're so passionate about helping people learn to believe that they're enough in the first place and learn to really find freedom from eating disorders and body dysmorphia and everything that you do to help people.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, and there's not probably a really short answer. I think that's a lot.
I don't need a short answer. I'm here for conversation.
Awesome. So, I mean, one thing I always kind of say, and it's kind of cliche, but it's very true, is that I feel like being a therapist is very much just like who I am. I think it's just, I kind of fought becoming a therapist because I had had some negative experiences with therapists, and I thought a lot of therapists were full of it, and I was not interested. I think, you know, again, another thing that we both kind of shared in common when we were both in high school is I think we were last together. We both were kind of in the midst of our own eating disorder struggles.
For sure.
And so I think like you, I struggled with an eating disorder for over a decade. And so, and definitely even while we were at boarding school, I was still actively like kind of in that struggle. And
me too.
And I know that we even probably, I think, kind of alluded and talked about that, but didn't really talk about it, you know?
Right. There was this support and like, oh, well, let's pray. We can pray for each other, right? But there was still this, like, it was so hard to talk about. It was shame.
Yeah, there's so much shame around it. And we were also kids, you know? Yeah. We were also, like, teenagers and, like, kind of not really knowing how do you support one another? And how do you talk about these things? And, like,
Do you know that I was sophomore year in one of the dorm bathrooms that someone pulled me aside and said, Trish, let me show you how to throw up. And here's not how to get caught.
I keep telling me that story. And I just unfortunately that was just, it's when you put a bunch of people together, it's like, it's just so rampant. And unfortunately, like I think there's not another message,
right.
You know? And you're struggling with so much. And again, it's like, especially at kind of these like elite type schools, and there's all this pressure and we're trying I think both of us being also like, I consider myself someone who's very much a perfectionist, but also a people pleaser and a caregiver. And I wanted to like care for other people. I wanted to lead. I wanted to do all these things. I wanted to do everything well. And like, I didn't want people to worry about me. I wanted to take, you know, but at the same time, like, I have all these needs that, again, like, are not being met, and I don't know how to handle them. I don't know how to cope with them. I don't know how to deal with all my feelings, and they feel so big. And so, again, trying to shrink my body, shrink my feelings, like, press them all down, and it's like, and I think, again, especially kind of, I think actually having that kind of, like, more, like, religious-type background, again, it's like, some people deal with, you know, these stresses by like alcohol or drugs or I think for me, it was like, I was such a good kid. I think we were both very much the
me
good
too.
Kid.
Right. I wanted to keep that.
Those roots, but I think food was one that like, that was kind of where I dealt with things, you know, was with my relationship with food and with my body. And we'll kind of get into it too with like, because you mentioned kind of the invisible illness or chronic illness. I think for me, a piece that like, it's only been the last couple of years that I put together too, is I think because I always actually like had different, you know, I think now understanding that I have this, I have a chronic illness and most likely that is genetic in nature. And so I've had some of like, in retrospect and look back and remember, I started having like joint pain and stuff when I was around 8 or 9 years old.
Wow.
But again, at the time, it's like 8 or 9 years old. Most people are like, oh, you know, like most 8 or 9 year olds don't have joint pain. So it's like, I just assumed that it was like, I was just kind of overreacting and maybe this is like just to kind of ignore it. So I think in many ways, very early on, I started to learn to kind of ignore my body. My body's
cancer. Interesting.
Including like the pain. And so I think, and then of course, like then you get the whole, like my body starts changing in middle school.
Oh God, that is the worst.
Coming up and my parents were like struggling and so it's just like all this stuff. And it was just like, what did I do? I kind of focused on my body and kind of focused on like, my body is the problem. And, you know, I kind of learned to kind of like, you know, I think I put a lot of focus on there and then therefore trying to like change my body. And then therefore like that impacted then my relationship with food. And again, I think that's the way that I coped. I think I can have a lot of empathy now when I talk to clients about eating disorders. I say like, again, I understand that like, this is the way that we survived. That there's no shame in having an eating disorder. That obviously we know that there's a lot of like,
I love that. Can you say that again? There's no shame in having an eating disorder. I think that I just need that needed to be said again because it is not said enough.
Yeah, I don't think there's any shame in this to understand that, like, we know that there's genetic, a lot of times, predispositions to this. And there's a lot of reasons, like, our society, I think, has a very disordered relationship with food. And
yes.
Yeah. I oftentimes have said, like, our society hasn't recovered from its eating disorder yet. So
I love that.
Yeah. I think, again, it's like, I think those of us who develop eating disorders or even just struggling with disordered eating, maybe it's not a full-blown eating disorder. I know some people don't identify with that necessarily, but I think, again, I love the analogy, too, of, like, the canaries in the coal mine, too, which is, like, the people who develop eating disorders or really struggle with, like, disordered eating, like, are the ones who are symptomatic, but the problem is that, like, our society has this really disordered relationship with food and bodies. And that's the problem, not necessarily those of us that are struggling. Like, we're going to be the most symptomatic, maybe. But that's not actually, again, the problem is the system. The problem is the culture we live in. And I think that's something that I oftentimes point out to my clients. A lot of times, like, it's like, you are not the problem. The problem messages that you've been told. The problem is a lot of times, or the problem are that these needs that are not getting met. Like, what is it? What is the purpose? Like, sometimes, like, that your eating disorder is serving. And sometimes, like, again, like, cause my goal is not just to take away someone's way of coping. Like, I want to figure out what the needs are and how do we help them to cope in some other way. Because my goal, again, is not to say, like, the eating disorder is bad. Because I think, actually, when we were in high school, I still had that mentality, which was, like, okay, I knew it was bad that I had.
Yes.
An eating disorder, and I felt ashamed of that, so I didn't want to talk that. And again, especially I was this like leader, and like, you know, we were both leaders in like this kind of like Christian organization. We were also leaders in our school, like, and we were leaders, you know, like
there we were in the spotlight, and so you had to keep it together.
Yeah, and so
Hold on, I have my mouth is like wide open because you know what I realized as you say that, I definitely held on to my behaviors longer. And I don't think I've ever heard it said as eloquently as you just said, because I thought somebody, by me truly seeking help and truly changing, you know, and like changing behaviors and actually wanting to pray for freedom from this, like my eating disorder is my friend in many ways. I remember being afraid of like, well, I don't know what's going to happen. I thought it was afraid of letting go of control, but you nailed it. It was afraid of, I had fear of letting go of my coping mechanism, because I thought there wouldn't be a substitute. I thought I'd be like sort of like drifting in the ocean of like, well, good luck there. Like,
yeah. And I think I often talk to clients too, especially like if clients are still in a situation where they're surrounded by a lot of pain or things like that. But sometimes, again, like understanding that for a time, like, again, my goal is not going to be to take away their eating disorder. I've had clients tell me that like their eating disorder is what's keeping them from killing themselves.
Yeah.
So therefore, my goal, again, is not at that point to say, okay, well, let's like stop you. Let's stop that eating disorder right now.
Right.
Like,
no, not at all.
Because obviously I'm like, well, you know what? I'm actually in many ways, like I'm really grateful. Like that's what's been able to keep me alive. So let's kind of like, and again, I think, and also in that way, like being able to actually like have gratitude sometimes for, you know, again, it sounds crazy, but having a gratitude for this eating disorder that like is the way that you've survived. And I think it takes away that shame of it. And says, okay, this
I love that. Sarah, I've never heard it said that. I literally just got chills down both my legs. I absolutely love that. Could you elaborate? Because I have a lot of listeners who are going to be listening who identify with having an eating disorder.
Yeah.
But a lot who will identify with saying, well, you know, I do have some like binge eating. Like, I do love that. I think our conversation relates to disordered eating or a full-blown eating disorder. Is there a line between that? At what point, as a psychotherapist, is there, I don't know, a definition or a way that you guys distinguish, or does it even matter? It's a coping mechanism of any sort.
That's really tough. I mean, I think there is a place for good assessment, you know, and
Sure.
like there are definitely like clinical definitions of like what meets the criteria of having an eating disorder versus disordered eating. But the truth is, what I always tell my clients is like pain is pain. Like if this is like you pain, if it's taking up a lot of room in your head, if this is like causing you distress, if this is something that's like that is problematic for you and it's impacting your relationships, it's impacting your relationship with yourself and your body, and like again consuming a lot of my space in your head, then I'd say then it's worth getting help. Like if it's disordered eating, if it's an eating disorder, like you know what, if it's painful for you and it's impacting you, then it matters, and then
It
it's worth getting help
matters.
for.
I
And so I think
love
that's
that.
where I'm gonna say like it's worth getting help. Like I don't really it doesn't really matter like where, again, I think sometimes, again, like hopefully if you're seeing a therapist, they can help kind of determine in terms sometimes like severity, in terms of like making sure we kind of connect you sometimes to the right. Because a lot of times eating disorders do require a treatment team. It may mean that like based upon certain symptoms, it may mean like we want to go get you checked out by a medical physician to make sure that we're checking for any kind of like, because eating disorders, while they're a mental illness, they can have physical consequences, like complications. So it's important sometimes to have get a doctor involved who understands eating disorders. Sometimes it's also pulling in a like dietitian who specifically specializes in eating disorders and like takes a non-diet approach and can kind of help that. And so sometimes it's getting a team involved. But I think again, like if you resonate with this and you are feeling like this is a problem for you, but I don't know if I have an eating disorder, but it's just like it's really hard for me, I'd say that is valid and you are worthy of getting help. Like you don't have, a lot of times I think with eating disorders, one of the classic symptoms is like people don't feel like they're sick enough. They're never
right.
sick enough. Just, and be like, well, because I'm not like X, Y, or Z, like then I'm not like really that bad. And I think that's one of the symptoms of like these diseases is that a lot of times you kind of minimize how bad it is. And so I'd say if it's a problem for you, like if it's taking up space in your mind, if it's causing you pain, it's worth getting attention for.
I love that. I love that. Can we shift this conversation now to the concept of, I love going back to actually what you said a few minutes ago about making your body the problem. Like when there's pain, we often go, okay, well, I can't change these circumstances, so the problem is my body, which is why most people, I think, not most people, but a lot of people really struggle with body confidence. We make our body the problem because it's something we can mentally bully ourselves, right? And we can feel like we can control. So, you know, I like what you said this, and I remember being afraid of being too big, taking up too much space. And you mentioned this desire to shrink the body so that maybe the other problems would shrink as well. Like, could you kind of elaborate on this concept of shrinking and taking up space and that this invisible illness that really, I think a lot of people have it going on in their minds. They're like, wait, someone else thinks like that? You know, I remember being like I was so encouraged when I was like, I'm not crazy. Like, I'm not the only one that's trying to like, sometimes like trying to take up more space and then sometimes I'm trying to shrink and like, it doesn't make sense. And my body's always the problem, no matter what. My body was always the problem. Or so I thought, really, you know.
Yeah. No, and I think that's really common. I think sometimes, again, a lot of times I say, like, when I start working with people to kind of, like, work on their relationship with food and their body, I feel like it's oftentimes it's a portal to everything else in their life. Because a lot of times it's almost kind of analogous to, like, other issues. Like, I was trying to shrink my body, but I think a lot of times what I was really trying to shrink was feeling like I wanted to take up less space in this world because I felt like I was afraid if I took up space, then I'd be seen. And then if I was really seen and people really knew who I was, and they really knew like all the issues that I had, that then I wouldn't be loved. Or
right.
if like, I took up less space, then I would be safe. Then I would be loved. I think, again, it's like these are these like basic human things. We want to belong. We want to feel loved. We want to feel safe. When those things are kind of threatened, it's like we try to figure out, again, like, good job brains and like bodies in many ways, we try to like adapt so that we can get our needs met. And a lot of times, like a lot of people develop these disorders really young. A lot of these kind of beliefs form young when we have little like, you know, black and white, non fully formed brains and kind of learn these things of like, oh, this is good and this is bad. And so okay, like if the problem is like this happened when someone like saw my body, then it must mean that my body is bad and therefore I need to change it. And let's also be really honest, which our society is ridiculously like horrible to bodies, especially
yes.
like, it uplifts a body type that truthfully that less than 5% of the population naturally has.
Mm. Is that really true?
Yeah.
5%, less than 5%? Wow.
Like the body kind of ideal that kind of gets lifted up, like this kind of like thin ideal is not a body type that most people naturally have.
Mm.
Yet we are told as a society that like everyone can have, like if you work hard enough, everyone can kind of have this body, which is people, size diversity is a real thing. People come in all sizes and shapes.
I love that. Let's just quote that. Size diversity is a real thing.
Yes.
Because it's, but I remember, I love what you just said, because like, if you work hard enough, you too can be beautiful enough. I remember, Sarah, feeling this immense amount of pressure that I put on myself and deep, deep failure that I felt like I was able to accomplish anything but this ideal that I thought I was supposed to be. And so I was like, well, I really am worthless. I can't even be disciplined enough to be good enough at working hard at this. And right?
Yeah.
I was constantly disappointed in myself.
No, totally. And now one of the things I really make a point of, even when I'm talking to clients, especially if I work with clients who live in larger bodies, which is to talk about the fact that, like, I'm really cautious of the fact that, like, I have what I consider thin privilege, just like we understand the privilege of different ways, that, like, I didn't do anything to earn my body size, really. Like, my body size, the size that it is because, you know, because this is, like, my genetics, and also, I mean, specifically even now for me, because also I have a chronic illness, which affects me actually probably being smaller than I might naturally be.
Interesting.
And it could easily at some point flip the other way, and that would be okay too. But I think for me talking to clients, which is learning to, like, I think that's what I talk a lot of times about, body acceptance, of accepting the body that we have, even if it's not necessarily the one that we would want. And sometimes I think that comes with a grieving process. Learning to grieve that, like, especially in our society can be really harsh to people who live in larger bodies. Like, fat phobia is another real thing. People are, like, we literally have this fear of, like, of being fat, of living in a larger body. We've demonized that. We've medicalized it. We, like, we have this, quote-unquote, obesity epidemic that says, like, people in larger bodies are, like, bad. They are diseased. They are immediately, like, seen as, like, less valuable, even though, like, the reality is that larger bodies have always existed. You look back at, like, history, and you look at, like, you know, I know that you lived in France, right? And
right.
Like, these great art museums, you see these, like, one point, like, larger bodies were
right.
viewed as beautiful.
With,
like,
curves and rolls and, like legitimate normal bodies.
Yeah. And
all shapes.
Yeah, these voluptuous, large bodies, like, people in, like, larger bodies or fat bodies, I say fat as in actually a neutral term at this
sure.
point, like, it's like there are people who are thin, short, tall, fat, like, fat bodies have always existed.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, like, we have made that term, like, a negative term, but really, in reality, like, they've all, like, people in larger bodies have always existed. At one point, it was a beauty ideal. Now, because of, there's a whole history of how this diet culture has arisen, which is fascinating, but like, but again, we've kind of now made it so these, like, small bodies are now kind of seen as the ideal.
Mm.
But the truth is, you've always come in all shapes and sizes. There have always been people who are going to be naturally smaller, shorter, taller, you know, larger, smaller. And yet we kind of, again, so again, I also acknowledge that to people, that that's a reality. Like, and so that's also, like, not in their head. Like, they're not a distortion. Sometimes for my clients in larger bodies to feel like people view their body as less than, like, that's not a distortion in their mind. The truth is, that's a reality. Like, our society treats people in larger bodies, like, worse.
And it's discrimination. So, and we need to just call it what it is, right?
Yeah, it's weight bias, it's discrimination, it's fat phobia, all of those things. And so I call that, and I say that, and it's like, the reality is, like, our world was, you know, it's not fair, you know, and sometimes, again, that, but again, I'm saying that's the system's problem and not your problem.
Oh, I love that. That's so freeing.
Your life, that your body is the problem. And instead, I say, actually, no, like, the problem is that our society doesn't make space for people in all their body size. We don't make furniture that's large enough for people, airplane seats that are large enough. But that doesn't mean that your body is a problem. It means that, like, our society, clothing stores don't carry clothes that fit. 50% of the population cannot buy clothes in stores.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah, 50% of our population, like, does not fit into, like, straight-sized clothing that are sold in stores.
Sarah, that resonates with me. I'm not sure if you know that one of the things about our boarding school that for in my story was I feel like I was probably one of the poorest kids in school. You know, I was on almost a full scholarship. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad was a plumber working 70 hours a week so that we could get these opportunities. So in order for me to have the ability to have a shirt that was remotely within season, I remember this was right when, like, internet came out and girls would shop on jcrew.com. And, you know, I have like seven girls in mind who'd like use their daddy's credit card and then not like what they got. And then they were too lazy to return it. And they'd be like, "Hey, Trish, do you want my size two?" And so if I wanted clothes that I thought would make me fit in, I remember this immense amount of pressure to say, you must be small enough so that you can be normal. And that's so interesting to me because that really resonates with me, this pressure to be a certain clothes size. And then for me, that was the standard because that was what the pretty rich girls wore. So, okay, well, that's the size they are. That's the size you should be. So I didn't even know that it really, statistically speaking, normal stores, quote unquote, normal stores, that the line goes only that there's a discrimination factor to that. That is gut-wrenching for me to hear because I know the pressure I put on myself. And you could say, okay, well, you're talking about a size 14 or a size 2, Trish. It's still the same problem, right?
No, it is. And that's where, like, I mean, again, that's why I have so many clients coming in and they're like, but I just want to be able to, like, sit in an airplane seat. I just want to be able to go buy clothes in a store. And a lot of times I'll sit there and be like, I hear that. And I am so sorry that, like, our world is like this, that you cannot, like, you should, again, I think that's just, like, you should be able to have space that fits your body.
Yeah.
Like, no, and also, like, again, I think about the fact that it's, like, no one shames me when, like, because I'm on the taller side, so yes. I always joke, I'm over height, you know, like, if you want to do it, like, that way, like, you know, like I'm on the higher end of the height spectrum. But no one ever, like, shames me or tells me that, like, I should, like, change my body because, like, sometimes, like, it's tight for me to fit in places because I'm tall, you know? Like,
that's a great analogy.
A really tall person, like, if my knees are hitting the front of, like, a seat or something, like, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm sorry, like, that's got to be, like, really, like, you know, like, people want to kind of try to accommodate me because it's just, like, this is my body. And also, like, I walk through the world with a lot of privilege, so that's why people want to accommodate me, too. But
right, right.
But again, I think also, but again, that doesn't happen. When someone's in a larger body, people are like, oh, yeah, like, what did you do? What have you been eating? What have you not been eating?
Well, what, talk to me about, like, let's talk about the person who is a size 6 and then, or an 8, but that has somehow become, well, not somehow, we know how this happens because of the, I don't know, you probably have better stats, the million, like, exponentially squared by a million number of media messages that we get that you have to be like your body, your size 6, your size 8, your size 10 is not beautiful because I can't see your abs or because you have a little bit of love hand, like that hey, I just have to get that one size down, I just need that last 5 pounds because then I'll be enough, then it's gonna, like, because I think there's a lot of people in that middle spectrum, right? Like,
an interesting thing, Trish, I'll tell you, like, having done this work for as long as I have, like, I feel like I used to kind of feel like I needed to kind of treat clients, and again, I'm kind of ashamed to say that, I feel like I used to probably almost have a bias that I thought, like, treating clients differently, that, like, if my clients who were in large, like, smaller bodies, maybe being, like, almost wanting to reassure them that, no, they're not actually, like, you know, like, too big or something like that. Again, I realized, I think that is actually incredibly, like, that's actually reinforcing the problem. Because I remember even being in treatment at one point and having people be like, oh, but don't worry, like, you're not going to get fat. Like,
right.
And I think actually that's the problem, which is, like, that still reinforces that is, like, that's something to be feared.
Right.
That I would not, that, again, I needed to fear that possibility. One, that, again, what is that people who are in, like, larger bodies, like, and, again, I think that kind of reinforced that there's still something to be afraid of. Because we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Again, like, I have a chronic illness, and for me, it's caused me to lose weight. Mm-hmm. It could at some point flip, because it has a metabolic effect, like, it could flip, and maybe I could end up gaining weight.
Right.
And for mixed people, they different reasons, they end up, you know, genetically they have a larger body, or like, again, someone who maybe genetically has a smaller body, but for whatever reason, there's a metabolic change and they're going to end up in a larger body at a later point. Like, we can't tell someone what size their body is going to be. And mm-hmm. so I think when we continue to say, like, don't worry, you don't need to worry about the size your body's going to be because it's okay. Mm-hmm. One, saying those larger bodies are not okay.
Right.
And then also, I think, again, it's continuing to lead to that fear that, like, okay, I'm okay now, but I can't get any bigger. And so I think that still keeps people
pressure.
From stay small. And so really, I've actually kind of moved towards much more of a, like, asking people when they're like, well, I'm like, you know, like, I don't know if I need to get smaller. So it's like, I'm like, or they're like, they're afraid to gain weight. It's like, well, what are you afraid is going to happen?
Right.
Like, what's going to happen if you do gain weight? Like, and again, I think it's kind of like actually getting people to lean into those fears of like, let's talk about the reality of like, and where did those beliefs come from? Where did mm-hmm. you learn that living in a larger body is worse? And like, and I think, again, there's a lot of discussion now about social justice and things like that. And like, not wanting to like, you know, like judge people based upon their sex. A lot of people are like, well, I, you know, like I'm totally fine with like larger bodies, but like, I just want my body to be smaller. I'm like, well, like that really work because
right.
like, and you saying that is still actually saying that like that other person's body is not as good.
It's
even if
not
you're saying
as good.
It's just my preference. But I was like, it's interesting that our preferences all meet what society's norms are. You know, like,
right. Well, so what do you say to somebody who, and that all makes a lot of sense, but how do you break the loop for somebody that is stuck in that, no matter what size they are, size 2, size 12,
yeah.
size 22, that says, no, I just want 5 more pounds. Like, cause that, I think that perpetuates, from some of my work, I've known and worked with a lot of people who more associate with disordered eating than a full-blown eating disorder, but who say, look, it's really just, I mean, I know these are vanity pounds or vanity this, but I'm really not going to be able to relax until I just get that. I it's going to what you said. My preference is that I'm just a little bit smaller, like that I will feel better at blank. Is that the same conversation going back
would,
to what
yeah,
you just said?
I'd say, okay, so at what cost?
I love that.
You know, like, so I think a lot of times it's like, okay, so like, I mean, I believe in body autonomy. I believe your body is your body and you get to do with it what you want. But a
yes.
lot of times, again, I have clients with eating disorders. Again, if they're in a smaller body and a larger body, and a lot of times, even when I'm having my clients in larger bodies, talking about how they just want to be able to like, you know, like, I understand. They're like, I just want to be able to fit on the planes there or something like that. And it's like, I just want these things. And I'm like, I understand that. And I'm like, and again, I can't tell you what to do, but
right.
sometimes the pursuit of that's going to keep you in your eating disorder. Like, so what, at what cost? Like, what are you giving up to get those last 5 pounds? What are you giving up in order to try and get that smaller body? What is it going to cost you? And a lot, it's costing us a lot. And sometimes, again, on the flip side, I say, sometimes that weight you are gaining comes with so much else that you gain.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, pain comes with you gaining, like, freedom to go out and have, like, pizza with your friends on the weekend. It is the freedom then to actually
right.
like sleep at night. It is the freedom to, you know, actually like to actually like start to make peace with your body, to start making
mm-hmm.
peace with food, like to not have this script running in your head. Because I think as long as we get focused on those numbers, like, because once you even get that number, then you have to maintain that. And the reality is 95 to 97% of diets or lifestyle changes or whatever you want to call them, like they
yeah.
did come, we've now changed them to other terms now.
yeah.
Which are still mostly diets. Like
right,
let's just
right.
get all those things when you're trying to manipulate people's bodies, like bodies are awesome. They are resilient and they don't like being manipulated. Humans don't like being manipulated.
I love that.
And so bodies don't like being manipulated. And so the reality is like they are wise and they are wonderful. This is how we've survived famines, is that when you start like restricting your calories, your metabolism's going to drop and then your body's going to eventually like kind of get smarter and put you back at kind of like the weight that it wants to be at. And
right.
so when we fight biology, it doesn't work.
I love that. So simple.
Yeah. 95 to 97% of like diets fail at 5 years. That's just the reality. It doesn't matter what you, I mean, again, they come up with new diets every day.
Of course.
You know, I know keto and all these new things and the new popular things, but it's like, whatever it is, like, you know, across the board, this is what we know.
Yeah.
Just focusing actually on trying to like more kind of what I would consider overall well-being.
Yeah.
Like, just like actually trying to like improve like your relationship with food, helping to kind of normalize that as much as you're able. Again, I will go back to what I said earlier, which is like understanding that sometimes some of these patterns are a reaction to coping. So mm-hmm. again, you continue to live in a state where you are under extreme stress, like maybe your degree to make able to fully make peace with food may be more difficult. Any kind of facing of restriction, again, even if it's not like, maybe you're restricted because like the work you do and you don't have access to eating during the day, well, that's still going to lead, any kind of restriction is going to tend to lead to that binge cycle. So
sure.
Sometimes peace with that. A lot of times that's what I work with people talking about binging.
Right.
Which is oftentimes the number one reason people actually sometimes want to seek my services. They're like, I want to stop binging.
Right.
And they don't want to stop. They're like, they like the restriction part. But
right, of
like,
course. But you're like, wait, then it's like, why am I, don't have the discipline
to stop binging. And you got to look at the cycle, which is like, look at the restriction. And so for whatever reason, mm-hmm. or sometimes again, food scarcity, things like that. I don't mm-hmm. know, again, like, I know for a lot of people, either they grew up with food scarcity, that could be because of diets in their home or because like they didn't have access to food.
Right.
So again, you've got to deal with that first, which is like, or someone still doesn't have access to food. Like we actually know that actually it's really interesting. And I don't know if you've heard this information too. It's kind of newer stuff that's coming out, but we're finding out that actually people who live with food scarcity, like people who like go to get food at like food banks and stuff, they've started doing some like testing about eating disorders, and actually the rates of eating disorders are higher in that population than they are in the general.
Wow, that's interesting.
Which is not surprising given the fact that they are, again, dealing with not because of psychological reasons, but because of even access reasons, there's a restriction.
Right.
That's going to mess with our relationship with food. So again, I also say like sometimes being able to totally heal that relationship with food is, again, is somewhat of a privilege. So again, I always tell people like, understanding that like sometimes maybe it's making peace with that. Like maybe there may, again, I think we can decrease some of the distress around the binge, but some people may still deal with some binging over time. And again, like maybe again, we can help decrease that. Like how can I help someone given their life circumstances to function the best they can possibly function given the life that they are living at this time?
I love that.
Versus trying to tell people like it's all or nothing. Like,
and you can forgive yourself as right. I mean, I remember the hatred and the, you know, we beat ourselves up so bad after a binge and like, you know, it's, but it goes back to how you started this conversation. You're not this is not the problem. You're not the problem. Like the disorder, the behavior is not the problem.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to go back to something you said, because I having been on the inside of the fitness industry, right? I think for me, one of the turning points goes back to one simple statement that you said, and I think it's going to free a lot of people who are listening potentially. At what cost? Because for me, I got in the fitness industry, and you know, being an athlete, I was like, one of my goals had been, I want to be, you know, on the cover of a fitness magazine in like that little bikini and like lean and ripped. And okay, so then I got into the real fitness industry and saw how those people, I actually have a lot of fitness pros who listen to my show. So you guys, I love you, but I'm also calling out the fitness industry as a big farce and a giant, very, very beautified with a big, big silver sparkly bow on it. Eating disorder, because a lot of personal trainers, a lot of fitness professionals who compete in on cover of magazines are living a applauded eating disorder. And so on the inside, knowing having a lot of friends who do these and being in that industry, I've seen firsthand the macro counting of broccoli as your major carb and weighing of food. And also, I know what it takes to diet down for one photo, one day, one time on the stage, one perfect photo, but you haven't had a carbohydrate in 2.5 weeks and you dehydrate yourself down. It literally, when I finally realized that this image that I had been working for years, and I understood the science behind the fact that that one, it's not maintainable. That on top of that image, then it gets airbrushed. And then I also was like, wait, those people don't even, they stop drinking wine. And I was like, okay, I'm out. Like, no wine, no chocolate for like your life. Like, everything is so, now for some people, and again, I have listeners who love that lifestyle. And as long as you find the right balance for yourself, but I do want to call the industry out for a very promoting and celebrating disordered eating patterns. But for me, it was an eye-opening event to go, Trish, you could look like that, but for what cost? Do you want to have a slice of pizza with friends? Do you want to share a bottle of wine with your husband? Yeah, I do. And that's when I was like, I made peace with that 5 pounds.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of times I say, like, I respect body autonomy. Like, you get your body, you decide. Like,
I like that.
And so I think again, like, and even that's the thing is like, I can't tell my clients not to have an eating disorder. You know, I'm like, true. At what cost? Like, let's talk about like the cost of continuing to maintain having an eating disorder. But like, again, it's not my job. I don't live your life. I don't know what it's like to live your life.
Body.
I can't tell you what to do, but let's just talk about it. Let's talk about like, and are there alternatives? Like, what would it look like to make peace with your body? And I think a lot of times I found clients again, like, they're much more at peace with their body actually. And once their body is actually, I mean, even neurologically, like sometimes their brain will start functioning again, like when it's nourished and fed. So that helps you to actually feel more at peace with your body. But again, I think there's, I just think it's really important to recognize that again, like I respect, like if it's your body, you get to decide what to do with it.
Yeah.
My issue though, again, like what you're calling out too, is I think when people say, if I can do it, you can do it, which is not, I hate the fitness ads that say no excuses. Like, look at my body. And I'm like, no, like you have those genetics.
Those are, like, and some choices that you made as well. Right. Right.
Those are your genetics. Not everyone can have a smaller body. Like I have clients who have what's considered, I hate the term, atypical anorexia, but they're in larger bodies, but they have all the symptoms of anorexia, but they're not in a smaller body.
Right.
And one, they're not getting diagnosed, which is a huge problem. And two, we're continuing to actually like even like prescribe eating disordered behaviors to people in larger bodies. Because of the fact that, again, like, because we still think that everyone should be able to have a certain size body when that's not, as we said, like earlier, size diversity is real.
It's
starting to respect that not everyone can have like a certain body size or shape. And so I think it's starting to learn. I think the more we can give, the more we can actually like start to show bodies come in different sizes and shapes and not continuing to uplift one type of body as like better than another. I think that's the more we can just say, let's help people to make peace with the body that they have.
I love that.
And eating in a way that works for you and your body and the access you have to food. I think that's really the key. And again, like saying like, and this is kind of another, like not to get in too deep, but a kind of like a side note kind of where we started this conversation too about health is I'd say the same thing with health is that not everyone has the same access to abilities too. Like, just like I think we don't want to applaud like one body being better for its size, but also not being better because of how it moves. Because I think that's been a big shift for me in the last few years. It's like realizing that I have a chronic illness is that like my body doesn't have the same capacities it used to have. When I was first in disorder recovery, I focused on this, like the focus on what my body can do, not how it looks. Which again was a shift in a way, but then the problem was my body couldn't always do things.
Sure.
Like my body doesn't have the capacity to do things that other bodies can, and that's okay. And my body's not less worthy
because of that. I love that. You know, I have two more questions because I want to respect your time, but I think these are important to ask you. I want to go back and revisit what you said about really forming the, like how some of these thoughts form when we're very young. I have a lot of moms who have reached out to me and say, how do I protect my daughter? How do I build body confidence in my child? Do you have one or two, three like little touch points of like how to, as a parent, you know, I mean, well, let's just face it. We're gonna fail at this in some capacity, and then that's part of the process. But what are a few things that we could avoid, or that we should be doing to really speak body confidence, body acceptance, body autonomy to our children?
First thing you can do is work on your own relationship with food and your body. The more you can do that in yourself, the best gift we can give to our children is to work on our own relationship with food.
I love that.
So
love it.
You can work with yourself, and as much as you can, like, again, model that to your kids. Don't, again, like, model, like, putting on a bathing suit and not, don't, you know, again, if they see you in the mirror, like, kind of pinching at your skin and talking about those 5 pounds and on the scale, like, even if you tell your kids that they're great, they're gonna look at you because you are their role model. So I think the more you can say, like, you know, again, I know a mom who talks about how, like, her kids come up and they see her stretch marks and she's like, and, you know, she's told them all, like, these are the stretch marks that came after you were born, and these are the ones that came after you were born. And it's like, and in some ways, like, the kids now, like, love seeing her stretch marks because they've learned that that's where they came from.
I like
and
that.
Isn't that a beautiful story of, like, how a stretch mark is this beautiful representation of this new life that came into the world versus it being this, like, ooh, gross. Like,
oh,
I
look what you did to me.
So really being this, like, talking about bodies in a way is, like, and talking about them really neutrally. It's like kids will kind of naturally come up and say, like, oh, that's soft. And being like, yeah, it's soft. Bodies come in all sizes and shapes. You know, I think the more we can just kind of normalize that, like, one body's, and I think one word I would love to give to parents too is to stop. Some parents, I think in a very well-meaning way, have started to actually say, like, made fat a bad word and told their kids, don't use the word fat. I actually would kind of actually challenge that and say, I think the more we can actually, like, again, because that still kind of says that fat is something to be afraid of. It's bad.
Yes.
And so I think actually the more we can talk about how, like, we don't call any, like, we don't use any words to, like, to cut someone down. Like, saying, like, someone is fat as an insult, just the same way, like, saying someone is skinny is an insult, or, like, you know, too tall is an insult, anything. Like, we don't use words to hurt people, yes. But
yeah.
I think that talking about how, you know, bodies are going to come in all shapes and sizes. I think the more you can kind of normalize that and say, yes, some bodies, you know, are fat. Some bodies are fat. Some are thin. Some are tall. Some are short. And they're all okay. There's a great book called Shapesville.
What's it called?
Shapesville. It talks about all these little, like, shapes, and they come in all different
Nice.
Colors.
I'll look that up.
And, like, it's a kid's book that kind of talks, I think, about how all bodies are good bodies, you
Love
know?
That. I will probably be buying that today. It's awesome.
Encourage that in children, like, for them to learn that, like, because they're going to get the other messages. But I think the more we can teach kids that all bodies are good bodies, and that, like, and the other thing I would say in terms of body, this is kind of more to relationship with food, is teaching kids to just, like, to trust their body, to listen to their body. You know, when kids are like, well, but, like, can I eat that? Instead of telling them, like, oh, you can eat this, you can't eat that, telling them, like, just listen to your body. Like, your body knows what you need. And I think the more we can kind of give kids that trust, and there's a great, if people are interested in that kind of idea too, there, Ellen Satter, the Satter Institute.
Okay.
You can maybe link that in your, like,
show notes. Yeah, for sure.
Notes has done a lot of work around what's called the division of responsibility, which is a whole kind of way to help kids to become competent eaters.
Nice.
For kids who are naturally picky eaters, or just kind of, like, helping your kids to learn to kind of, like, trust their bodies. And, I mean, if people are interested too, like, they can definitely reach out to me. I follow a couple different people who, like, are specifically, like, work, like, some dietitians that work with children and families who can also, like, some great accounts, like, if people are looking for Instagram accounts to follow.
Love it. Sarah, that is such a resource. Like, I'm actually, you should see my pages and notes here. I've got, like, 3 pages. And I'm, like, legitimately going to buy Shapesville today. So, yeah. I had one final question. Well, okay. If you were just to tell somebody one thing today, what's your biggest takeaway that you just, like, someone is just feeling like, all right, this all makes sense, but Sarah, like, how do I just, what's one thing I can tell myself just to know that I'm enough starting today? Is it as simple as just saying that to myself? What's that parting phrase you want somebody to finish with today after they listen?
I think actually the message I'd really just say is actually more just, like, to be gentle and compassionate with yourself. Like, this is a journey. If you have spent years, like, hating your body, like, don't expect to love it or be confident in it today or probably even anytime real soon.
I like that. That's truth.
I think the truth is sometimes the first thing we can do is just, even if we can just be kind or respect our bodies. I don't expect people to, like, love their bodies or be confident in their bodies. Like, some may never get there. Some may get there years later. I think if you can just be compassionate, and sometimes I say, like, what is, like, that next just, like, small right step for you? Like, and again, you don't even have to commit to the rest of today. Definitely not, like, the rest of your life. But, like, what's the next right step in this moment? Like, how can you maybe be a little kinder to your body in this moment? So just starting with a really baby step.
Love it. I love it. Finally, how do people connect with you if they want to get in touch?
Yeah, I do a lot on Instagram. That's kind of where I put out a lot of material.
Awesome.
Which is, I am whole_embodied_therapist on Instagram. You can definitely come follow me. I write a lot of the stuff that we've talked about. I make posts about on a regular basis if people are on Instagram. I also have a Facebook page where most of my Instagram content, if you're on Facebook instead. Or I have a website, which is wepsychotherapy.org. So wepsychotherapy.org. So those are kind of the places to kind of connect to me. Feel free to get to be in touch with me. I love when people connect with me on social media stuff. And there's also, again, I think that's one thing when you said about being more body confident. I really think that social media can be really tricky. It can be a really hard world, mm-hmm. and there can be a lot of stuff out there that's, like, really horrible. And I also feel like, unfollow the things that make you feel bad about your body.
Boom. Simple solution.
And start following accounts that are the opposite, that show diverse bodies, that kind of, like, share other messages. And the cool thing is there's a lot of really awesome non-diet, like, body positive accounts out there. Again, if you kind of come follow me, like, I try to keep my list of who I follow pretty safe. So if you want to come, like, you can come over to my page, and kind of find that, or feel free to message me, and ask me about some accounts. I'd be happy to kind of give you some resources of other accounts to follow too, because I do think I've seen that make a big difference for people, of, like, changing what you're seeing, changing the messages that we're hearing on a regular basis can make a big difference. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Sarah, I love you. I love what you're doing. And I love that how valuable this conversation has been. And I cannot wait to hear feedback and share that with you and have people connect with you. Because like I said, pages of notes, and it's so good. Keep on keeping on, girl.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me on your show. I just appreciate the opportunity to come talk to you and all of your people. And it's fun to connect. Hopefully we can do it again before another half lifetime goes by.
For sure. I told y'all she was good, right? I mean, I was taking notes, and I love some of the perspective shift that she gave me. Even though I feel like I'm always in this space and learning more, I love that there's always more to learn. And in review, what are your next steps if you feel stuck? Well, number one, get in therapy. I believe everybody should be in therapy. Number two, journal and work with a coach. And if you're looking for a coach who gets it, I get it. I would love to work with you. Or number three, another way you can get started is to sign up today for the Donut Diet. You can get more info on the Donut Diet at www.thedonutdiet.com, spelled D-O-N-U-T, thedonutdiet.com. All right, guys, just a couple quick announcements. Actually, just one announcement. And we're gonna highlight our listener of the episode. One announcement, that is the Mom Boss Mastermind. You guys, I am limiting the Mom Boss Mastermind to 8 people, and it's going to be application process only. I'm accepting applications between now and the end of October. It's going to be amazing. And here's the deal. You qualify to apply, and it's free to apply, by the way. You qualify to apply by being a mom and being an entrepreneur. If you're a mom who wants to have more free time to be a mom, and you also are an entrepreneur, mompreneur, let's call it what it really is, you're a mompreneur who wants to double your revenue, so you want to double your free time and double your revenue in 2019, then the Mom Boss Mastermind is for you. It starts in 2019. So this is, I'm getting really serious about getting people who are serious together and who are already thinking about their goals for 2019. So if this is you, go to trishblackwell.com/mastermind. You're going to get all the info there, and then hit the application button and I will send you an email with application so you can get in consideration. I would love for this year that's coming, 2019, to be a year that changes and exceeds beyond your wildest dreams and your expectations, doubling your free time so you can be a better and more present and alive and engaged mom, and doubling your revenue so you can be more productive, have more financial and time freedom, and then make that difference in the world that you so crave in your soul. Again, that's trishblackwell.com/mastermind. Now let's highlight our listener of the episode. Her name is Katie. Here's what she said. She said, "Hey, Trish, my name is Katie, and I've been binge listening to your podcast over the last year and a half, and I'm finally all caught up. I listen to your podcast in the morning while I'm getting ready for work. I work at a local public school system in Indianapolis where I'm a speech pathologist providing services to preschool and kindergarten students. It's easy to get burnout in my profession, and I was starting to feel that way, snapping at people, feeling short-tempered with my coworkers and boyfriend and friends, and it just wasn't the best version of myself. I felt like I was in a rut, not happy, just not going around the motions of my day, just surviving. And since I started listening to your show, I've started reading personal development books, downloaded a daily gratitude app, and I set 3 daily reminders to log, and have been working on my gratitude on the go that you suggested, listing something I'm grateful for on one of my fingers before I do anything else. Something that recently really resonated with me in one of your podcasts was when you discussed how you and your husband view compliments as jewels. I wanted to find a way to use that strategy at work and spread some joy for others. So I've started this school year with a new mindset and pet project. I call it my throw kindness around like confetti project. Every time I think of something positive about a coworker, I try to anonymously write a note and put it in their office mailbox. This practice has put a positive lens on my day-to-day work life, knowing that I'm giving out positivity to others. Thank you for your positive attitude. Your podcast has done more for me than you can imagine, not just in my work life, but in my overall happiness. Thank you." And Katie, thank you. I was so inspired by your throw kindness around like confetti project that I'm like, how can I do that? I'm not in an office environment. I want to do that. But it means I'm trying to be more proactive to my old friends and reconnecting, as you see here, reconnecting with friends of my past who are doing amazing things and celebrating them for that, and putting a microphone to their voice so that more people can hear what the great things that they're doing and the great way that they think and be inspired and encouraged along the way. So I freaking love what you're doing. And especially, I mean, let's be honest, teachers, especially with young children, well, teachers of all ages are underappreciated and it's often a thankless job. So I love that you are spreading love and gratitude and thankfulness and positivity to people who really deserve it more than so many other people. We all deserve it, but really, truly, it probably are way underappreciated. I bet you could never imagine the depth of impact that you're making with those small little notes. So thank you for sharing that with me. And I would hopefully somebody else out there is going to be encouraged and inspired to throw kindness around like confetti in their work environment as well. So you guys, I challenge you to do that. And let's do this together. Let's throw some kindness towards our bodies, celebrating it for what it is and how it looks, the cellulite, the jiggle, the flaws, you name it. It's gorgeous. This is the body that I live in, and it is awesome. What would happen if you said that today? Now, please share the show, hit that subscribe button, and leave a review, and I'll see you guys next week here on the podcast Airwaves. Thanks for letting me have the honor of being your confidence coach to remind you of the truth and life that comes in the thoughts that you think. Now, go out there today. Go be more of who you are. Be you. Be free. Thanks for listening. You can get more confidence resources at trishblackwell.com. If you loved the show, let me know by writing a review on iTunes and by connecting with me on the gram at @Trish_Blackwell. You can take your confidence to the next level for free by downloading my detox devotional. The detox devotional is 5 days of 5-minute devotions to inspire joy, infuse you with confidence, and help you own the truth that God loves you deeply. Now be more, be free, be you. and be here for next week's show. I'll see you then.